Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, it is it's a Nolcast where the number 7 will probably be thrown around a decent amount of times as we look back at Florida State's 7th consecutive victory over University of Miami. A big win for this year's team, a big win potentially for the program overall, hopefully finding a place where it gets itself on track. And we're able to look at a team that appears to be, at least temporarily, if not for one game, fully bought into what's around them. So interesting conversation ahead. Want to enjoy what was a significant victory, but also want to not let the emotional pendulum kind of swing too far one way or another. But at the same time, rivalry games mean a lot. They certainly mean a lot to the fan base. And when you're consistently making the team down south look at a scoreboard that has them losing, it'd go a long, long way in smoothing over any frustrations that a fan base might have with the team.
Ingram, 7 wins in a row over Miami, tying the longest streak ever in the series, which is also held by Florida State. And I've got another 7 for you. That's 7 days a week that Louisiana Hot Sauce is the sponsor of the number 1 FSU podcast. That's the Nolcast. Be sure to follow us on iTunes. Give us those nice 5-star ratings. You can hit us up on Twitter at Nolcast. Louisiana Hot Sauce is great because it gives you heat, but not too much. If you shake the thing a couple times, you haven't ruined your meal. You just enhance the flavors that are already on your plate. Very versatile. Great sauce for wings, pork chops, eggs. I know we've put it on so much different stuff. Really a great sponsor to have. Because of the versatility, and you know, Florida State's defense had to have a lot of versatility in terms of players playing different spots and rotating on Saturday night because they continued to deal with some injuries.
However, they dealt with injuries and rotations with an effort that we certainly had not seen otherwise. It was good to see. Certainly, a part of that is going to come just as a natural byproduct of the team you're playing and just playing in that environment. But, you know, one thing that emotion won't necessarily cover up, or one thing that emotion won't fix, is responsibilities. And that was nice to see, a defense that didn't blow anything or too many egregious situations, didn't have the personnel running 10, 15, 20 yards downfield, as we've seen in previous games. Now, to be fair, this was against a system where the likelihood of that was a lot easier to defend against, and it's a lot easier to understand your responsibility, particularly with what Florida State asked of their defenders. But a lot of different pieces, and certainly we'll talk about some of the injuries sustained in the game, but I think we would be remiss to start the conversation about this game anywhere else than the defensive side of the ball, and talk about an effort that would have been hard to predict. Only gave up 20 points, and really, when you consider the punt return that factored into one of Miami's scores, it's an even better performance than maybe the scoreboard would immediately show you.
So let's start there with effort, Ingram, because last week Jimbo Fisher didn't really want to acknowledge the lack of effort maybe fully that some of the players on this team were giving. But I learned through some sources this week that Florida State's players actually signed a promise that was suggested by Jimbo Fisher that now hangs in their lockers. And if you haven't seen this on Tomahawk Nation, you can go check this out because I asked some players about it. But I'm going to read you the promise here, and then we can discuss sort of what this means. I promise, as of October 4th, 2016, I promise to give Florida State football my all. There will be no more loafs and no lack of effort. I will trust the process. I will do everything in my power to prepare and play for this team. Every play, every day, I will bring effort, enthusiasm, and pride in upholding the standards set forth by Florida State football, and I will allow myself to be corrected and coached. So there are a lot of questions here. In no specific order, what does it say about where this team was that Jimbo Fisher felt the need to do this? Culture-wise, program-wise, maintaining versus, change agent wise. Those are sort of macro questions. On the micro, do you think this actually worked, or do you th- do you think it's too early to tell because it was Miami and the guys are going to be hyped up anyway?
Yeah, 2BD there. Hard to say. I mean, you're going to – I don't care what you have, people. You can have them drop all-in chips in a bucket. You can have them sign a pledge. You can have them slap a sign as they leave the locker room. You're going to get someone's top effort when you're wearing white jersey, gold pants, and a spear on your head when you're playing against Miami. That's just a natural byproduct of the rivalry. And even if you're not from a kid who went to a high school like Carroll City or Armwood or any of the other programs across the state, just going in an environment like that, playing in front of fans like that, is going to bring out a level of emotion that that is really hard to replicate, hard to find. So I would not want to judge the effectiveness of this pledge through the prism of what we saw from the Miami game.
I completely agree. Now, I think to answer the other questions, what does it say about the program that Fisher felt the need to do this? I think it says that the program is not in a very good place, that maybe they misread where this team was, especially in the offseason and through fall camp. And I think it's an acknowledgement that players were not playing hard, that they really were not giving a damn. That what we said last episode, some of them just kind of like being FSU players, but maybe not, you know, given the work that it takes to actually be great. Sort of that the hardest percentage to get is going from 90 to 100. Well, that may be true, and that's not a good sign about where the program is. However, I think that Jimbo Fisher decided to do something about it, and something this potentially drastic, although it really, you know, it wasn't necessarily public until we broke the story. It's at least good that he's acknowledging it, right? That he's saying, hey, we know we have a problem here. Let's try to do something about it. And I do think it may have motivated some of those guys. Maybe not on game day, but perhaps on a random Tuesday, like when you're preparing for Wake Forest and you're saying, huh, you know, I don't really need to watch this film. I don't really need to go to my lifting session. I don't really need to lift the max weight. I don't really need to work as hard as I can in practice. Maybe there, for a certain percentage of guys out there, is a little bit of a guilt trip involved in this promise hanging in their locker. Maybe it'll help them recall what happened when they didn't give great effort. And, you know, to make the point, we've said on this podcast before, look, Josh Sweat on the field is the loafingest guy on the team. I mean, just everybody wanted to focus on the Matthew Thomas in the clip last week, but Josh Sweat consistently has loafed at Florida State. And he did not loaf on Saturday, at least not that I saw, not much. He played really hard, great effort. It looked like he actually had passion for the game. He was aggressive. He was violent. But most importantly, he gave a damn. And I tell you what, Jimbo Fisher in multiple media settings made sure to point that out, specifically about Josh Sweat, but about a lot of the players, but about Josh Sweat. In the interview with Jeff Cameron, he pointed it out. Today in the press conference, he pointed it out. In his coach's show on the Fox Sports Sun or Sunshine or whatever it's called, he pointed out how Josh Sweat got some the issues that he had corrected last week and played hard, gave effort. That, to me, is kind of an acknowledgement. Yeah, look, there was definitely an effort issue. Some of those guys, we knew they'd been banged up. But, man, I tell you, after watching them against Miami, you kind of wonder how much some of that stuff was them being hurt and how much was it just kind of lazy going through the motions effort.
It's an interesting question to ask, Bud, and it's hard to, you know, it's not something we're going to know for sure probably at any point, and it's certainly not something we're going to know after the Miami game. The Wake game will give us a better idea as to how much focus. Obviously, you've got the you know, the emotional roller coaster and the high that is the Miami game, and you've also got a bye week that is followed by your toughest opponent on the schedule. So the ability of this team to kind of fall back into a routine, have a good week of practice. Don't want to make too much of a Wake game at any time, but it will be telling and kind of an idea as to how much this pledge and talk about effort and buy-in, how much that really carries over. But for a week, absolutely. I mean, look, let's not minimize the effort that the defense gave overall, and we'll talk about this later. Miami certainly did some things to maybe put themselves in a situation where that effort would be maximized, but defense came out and look like a different defense. And if we're going to start the conversation about what was different, then I think we have to go to the interior of the defensive line. A guy who I think was probably more injury related than effort, but 91, Derek Nnadi, for the first time all year, looked like the player that we heard about in camp, and was that disruptive force inside that that we kind of talked about at the beginning of the year. And that was, look, there's a lot of different places on this defense that played at a higher level than they had the rest of the year. But 91 played great, as did the other guys. Wally Ame is a guy who looks like he's earning more and more time for himself every time he goes out there. But great performance from the defense overall, particularly the interior of the defensive line.
Yes, absolutely. And that's where it all started, up front with great effort. You know, it's not always easy to run on Florida State on the edges. And in the middle, though, with Derek Nnadi playing better, and I agree with you, I think he's a guy who really was battling an ankle injury that was worse than perhaps the coaching staff wanted to admit publicly. Wally Aim is really coming on strong. You know, DeMarcus Christmas now is going to have to battle for more snaps as Aim's in there more. Fred Jones, we've always thought of, at least in the last kind of, I guess, season and a half, as a strong backup. Surprising one, but a strong one. That Derek Nnadi had such a game that Miami really could not single block him very often. And that was huge. Because it screwed up some of the things Miami wanted to do up front, I think. The dominant defensive effort up front from Florida State. I mean, Miami, their run game on the night was just kind of non-existent. They had, 62 yards on the night, I think it was, rushing. That's pretty terrible. And, in fact, I have the breakdown here. If you look at their first down runs, right, 4, negative 1, 2, 2, 9, 3, 3, 3, 12, 11, 5, 1, 0, 2, and then obviously the negative 2, which was the kneel down before the half. Those are not as awful as I thought they were going to be before I read them off, but they're also not great, right? I mean, you have 6 out of 14 are for 2 or less, and then you have another 3 that are for 3. So they're not consistently getting 4 and 5 yards on first down runs, and Florida State made them pass on first down. And I tell you, we'll get into this in a second. I was surprised a little bit that Miami didn't stick to the run more, but perhaps it was some of the early wins that Florida State had there against the run that made Miami get out of that some. But up front, they did a really good job in this game. That was the best game this front has played start to finish all year. And I got to tell you, I didn't think Miami's offensive line, having watched them, was this bad, right? I knew they didn't have much depth, but the starters I thought were actually pretty decent. And Florida State really got the upper hand for a lot of this game.
Had the upper hand, but they also, you know, you saw a little bit more in the last game that they were going to blitz. It felt to me like you blitzed more. Certainly there was a intention to disrupt the quarterback, Kaya, whether it be that kind of predator prowler type look that Florida State gives situationally in third and long. Or just in general, if Kaya has things in front of him and if Kaya has kind of moved out of his comfort zone, becomes a significantly less effective quarterback. And look, that started from the first play. And Bud, I think this is both something that you and I want to talk about is the hits that Kaya took, the hits that both quarterbacks took. But I'm not sure if Josh Pugh doesn't change the course of the game with the first snap and the sack that is made in kind of the play action call in the first play of the game where Pugh ends up slamming him down on his shoulder there.
You got Josh Pugh or Jacob Pugh and Josh Schwett combined just like I did the other day.
Nice.
Keep doing that, man. Yes. Sorry, Jacob, but I totally agree with you.
The famous Josh Pugh there that I've put on the roster. Thank you.
I got to say, man, if I'm not as high on his defense as maybe I thought it was going to be if you just looked at the peer numbers. And there's a couple of reasons for that. And we're going to go over these because I feel like it's really important that you don't let a win or a loss, you know, totally shape your opinion on the team. You got to look at actually how they played. I think that Brad Kaya's shoulder was hurt on that first play. You're right. Pugh just completely slams him to the ground. We know that Kaya didn't throw today in practice. In fact, the line for Miami and Vegas is off the board at a lot of books, at least as of 10 p.m. on Monday evening. He played terribly. I mean, nowhere close. And I'm not talking about playing terribly because he was affected by pressure, which certainly there was some pressure on him. But even on plays where he wasn't pressured, he really had a bad night, man. I mean, just not always due to anything Florida State did, which is sort of, you want to think, okay, everything is attributed to something, right? Like Florida State forced all these bad throws. Not necessarily. I do think his shoulder was messed up in that game. But let's look at something specifically here after the Matthew Thomas hit, which was an absolutely ejectable offense, and really something I think that if you do that, if you go high at somebody like that and launch yourself, I think Thomas should get a whole game, right? I mean, like a full game on top of the half, but that's just me. I think that to me is different from like a safety trying to separate a receiver from the ball. You know, if you go late and high on a quarterback who's already thrown it, and clearly he's already thrown it, and that's...
And launch. I know you said that, but yes. And 2 feet off the ground. Yeah, I mean, that's just... I personally think that was part of a tit for tat back and forth that both teams got into. But
Miami should have been flagged at least once and probably twice more as well.
That was not an accident by any means.
Your thought about this being like pitchers throwing at each other and throwing at the opposing batters in baseball to make up for it was, I thought, spot on. That was a great thought.
Thomas certainly in the stats, and we'll get to it. After that hit, I'll also point out Thomas gets him on a third down blitz, a little bit of a slow developing play where Kaya again looks like a different quarterback for a little bit. It's actually the Ermine Lane series where he comes in and makes that nice play and run support. But yeah, regardless of where it happens, and I'll point out the first play of the game, once he gets tackled, Kaya has a pretty ominous look on his face. Now, maybe that's just because, hey, we schemed for this, and first play of the game, I got brought down. Maybe it's that he knew he had injured something. Maybe it's that he sustained a concussion. I don't know, but Florida State got to him a lot, and the one where, as you mentioned, Thomas was rightfully ejected, he certainly was not the same quarterback after that hit.
In fact, check these numbers out. 3 of 9 for 46 yards with one touchdown and one pick after that hit.
And one game-altering, trajectory-changing interception.
Probably the worst throw of the game by either side. I mean, that was terrible. So, pre-hit, let's just do some reverse engineering on this, right? Pre-hit, he was 16 of... I'm doing live math here. 16 of 23... For what, 168 with the touchdown and no picks. That's a lot different, man. 3 of 9 for 46 yards and a touchdown interception. I'm going to figure out that quarterback rating for Brad Kaya after he was hit. Ooh, you want the NFL or you want the NCAA one first?
Let's go NCAA.
NCAA is a 90.7. Folks, if you're under 100 in NCAA, that's really horrid. You want the NFL? Because I know a lot of people are used to the NFL quarterback rating because they see it on their fantasy football stats.
Right, they're probably more familiar with it.
Please, you want to take a guess?
Hit me with it, bud. I'm not sure.
48.6.
Good Lord! Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I shouldn't be that surprised that it's that low when you complete a third of your passes and throw a pick, but damn. Yeah, that puts it in perspective.
Yeah, so if you were to go with his, if you were to go for his pre-knockout numbers, 145. So before the shot, 145. After the shot, 90.7. Or if you want to go NFL, before the shot was 104. Pretty good. After the shot, not so good. So I do think there's a legitimate question here we can ask. How much outside of effort, which is not insignificant. We need to point this out. This does matter that you give effort and that you give consistent effort. You play with passion. And no, we don't expect you to play with that Miami level of passion every week, but there's a certain baseline level of effort you need to give that Florida State was not always giving this year. Other than effort, how much do you think Florida State's defense actually improved, and how much do you think this was Miami having a quarterback who was maybe concussed, certainly injured shoulder, and a real bad plan on offense? How many times do you think Miami used motion in this game, something that screwed up Florida State's secondary literally every time teams did it this year?
Yeah, great question, Bud. It's something that I've looked for. I haven't – maybe they did. I haven't seen it. I'm almost positive they didn't show it at all in the first half. I've watched that now three times and haven't noticed any motion. And also, I don't recall them stacking any wide receivers either, which has given Florida State – if anything has bothered Florida State more as far as knowing what their responsibility is on the defensive side of the ball more than motion, it's been any kind of formation and the features of a stacked look at wide receiver.
I don't get it. Like I mean, look, I know it's Mark Richt in a rivalry game, which is about the worst thing you can be. The dude lost to Treyon Harris twice. Like, that somebody tweeted at me, this is the perfect opponent or perfect opposing coach for FSU to have at Miami, because you know he's going to always make Miami like good enough to where it's going to be a solid win for Florida State, but yet he is one of the worst coaches in big games, which is also true. No stacking receivers, no motion, very, very little that Miami did was anything that really messed with Florida State. I didn't see a whole lot of two-back run game out of them. That they ran a lot out of the shotgun, which, you know, I get, and there's some RPO elements to that, but another one of the RPO elements is having the ability for the quarterback to run, which Kaya really doesn't have. You do see some NFL teams try to RPO it with the pocket quarterbacks. They only had one deep threat, and they hit him a couple times in Coley, but the rest of those guys are not really true deep threats. They didn't do a great job of taking advantage of Florida State's or one of their major weaknesses on the defense, which is the star position. In fact, Florida State, I don't know if you noticed this, Florida State actually ended up playing more of their 3-4 or 4-3 against three wide receiver sets than it had for a lot of the year, right? Usually they swap personnel on that, but I think Florida State is so depleted in the secondary right now and just not very good in the secondary at this point that they're like, well, screw it. I mean, what's the point of putting extra DB on the field if it's not really going to help things? So sometimes they didn't, and they just kept bigger personnel on and kind of dared Miami to throw, which after their quarterback got whacked in the head, was a very efficient strategy.
Yeah, it's interesting. And you talk about injuries. Obviously, Thomas gets ejected, as we just alluded to, about 2 minutes into the third quarter. Nate Andrews injures a shoulder, making a tackle about 6-7 minutes into the game, tries to play for another 2 or 3 minutes after that, when Miami hits that long kind of screen pass where you see 29 running around with his arm about 6 or 7 inches out of socket. Becomes pretty obvious that he's playing injured, and I don't think you see him again.
I don't
again.
Think he's going to be back anytime soon.
And yeah, I was going to say, and from the early reports, I don't think you're going to see Nate playing for a little while. So yeah, I mean, you've got guys, Marshall played exclusively at corner, a little bit solid performance from him. But if we're going to talk about the positions that were moved around in the secondary, probably need to discuss, don't want to make too much out of it, but discuss the level of play that you got from number 7, Ermon Lane, and how much of a factor he'll be moving forward. It was a hell of a debut for a guy that had otherwise only been noted for his ability to block as a wide receiver.
Yeah. Well, we knew he was physical from being a receiver, right?
And you knew he cared. You don't block like that if you don't care a lot. So
yeah,
you knew he had effort and you knew he was physical.
Look, I'm under no illusions that Ermon Lane is going to be a great safety for Florida State this year. I think that other teams with a lot better plan than Miami will take advantage of him, most notably probably Clemson and NC State. Got a freshman in Carlos Becker who, you know, is coming along, but I don't know if he's really ready to contribute yet back there. You don't have Nate Andrews, you know, Marshall's like Lane and Westbrook, you know? And that's, if that's what you got, that's what you got. I was very pleased with how Ermen Lane played, man. And I'm sure Florida State has to be too. If he was making mistakes, he was making aggressive mistakes, right? He played with passion. He played hard. It wasn't easy to learn a position like that. He's only been doing it for about a month now since he switched positions, maybe a little bit less. So, and I know he played a little bit in high school. He played some safety, but I was impressed by that. That was a good sign. He made a couple tackles for them. Yeah, four tackles, which was tied for third most in the game. Four solo tackles, according to the stat sheet. I was impressed, and they're going to need him because I don't think you're going to get Nate Andrews back anytime soon if they even get him back in this regular season. I really, that injury looked bad. And I'm not a doctor, and I'm not trying to diagnose somebody based on a replay, but based on Jimbo Fisher's comments, I believe on the coach's show, he called it a serious injury. So that's certainly not good.
I would read more into that than anything that we witnessed on television.
It may be time to consider. Do you remember in the open practice when kind of like as an emergency option that they let Marquez White play some at safety?
I do remember that, yes.
Look, Marcus Lewis has really struggled at Star. I don't know that he was this bad at I don't know if he was as bad at corner as he was at Star when they're actually having him play some corner at camp. It may be time to consider. Look, can Marcus Lewis play some corner? And if so, do you let Marquez White get some reps at safety? I know that's probably not the best for White's draft stock, but right now, man, your safeties, if Marshall stays banged up, are Lane and Westbrook, right? That's not very good.
Yeah, that'll come back to bite you, certainly. I mean, you can get away with it some, and Lane has done a great job of acclimating himself and has surprised some within the program as far as how quickly he's picked it up. But that's not something you can just plan on rolling with moving forward. So yeah, that's something to watch. Certainly would be curious to see how the parties adjust to that. And obviously you'll get some help with the addition of Derwin James when he's brought back into the fold. But in the meantime, injuries have certainly taken their toll, and you're going to have to do something in all likelihood with some of the pieces that you have, because you just don't have a real viable option at a couple positions.
So right now, your star position is pretty much Kyle Myers, right? Who is a little bit scary. Obviously, Trey Marshall, I think, could probably play some star. But if you get him back, do you want him playing star, or do you want to leave him at safety, right? Mm-hmm. I was encouraged by the play of Levante Taylor. Let me say this. I think getting those young guys in there was a good thing for a couple reasons. And we had a lot of questions about this, and we're going to do a little Q&A segment at the end of this when we figure out just how long we want this podcast to be. But I don't want to do it all Q&A tonight. I want to kind of answer stuff organically first. But the young guys played with passion, they played hard, and they seemed to, for the most part, stick with their man. Now, that's good. However, playing tight man coverage is no substitute for being completely unable to play any semblance of good zone defense, because there are teams out there, unlike Miami, who will shred Florida State if Florida State tries to play this. If they try to play this, like just man this much against Clemson will drop 50. You've got to be able to play competent or really good, which you should be able to do. This is Florida State, for God's sakes. You should be able to play really good zone defense, too. Right now, they can't. Obviously, some of that's youth, some of that's injuries, but I think some of that is coaching as well and a lack of development so far within the scheme. But the young guys were encouraging. The Levante Taylor looked into the backfield for probably a split second too long there against Stacey Coley, but that they still forced Miami to make a really good play. And that was, I think, one of the good things of the night. You didn't see the guys running wide open as much. What you did see was that they forced Miami to execute at a high level if they were going to score. Now, that's high risk, high reward. You also saw that a lot from Miami, too, on their defensive side. But I think that's, at least for Miami, that was a good plan. And I credit the staff for coming up with a plan that the players felt confident in, right? They at least, you could tell, I think, that they were confident in what they were doing. That they did it with aggression and passion and without hesitation and without second-guessing themselves.
They did. That was a nice step forward to see. I agree with you. If you are only able to show this defense that's almost exclusively man, you're gonna that's not gonna be a story that's very enjoyable for long. But at the same time, you have to get you know, you've got to recover before you can really start to implement the things that you want to. And if it meant that you had to come down to some base level of defense, and it certainly helped with the offense that you faced and some of the situations that they did not put you in. But it was a nice rebound and a nice effort from the defense, and it was certainly the fastest of the team that was responsible for winning the game on Saturday night. And this is a special teams play, and it's something that maybe we would have talked about otherwise. But if we're going to sit here and talk about effort and talk about a guy who you know, made a play when he didn't necessarily have to, I just want to point out the tackle made by Logan Tyler on that punt return. That's not too many punters in the country are going to bring a kid down like that, and that was a rather significant moment in time in the game as well.
Absolutely was, man. And Logan Tyler, look, for some of his struggles punting this year, he's had some good ones, he's had some bad ones. Florida State's had some coverage issues too. He at least he's an athlete, right? If you've seen Definitely Logan Tyler in person.
Yeah, he's not a kicker.
Compared to all these other guys, he doesn't look very big. But you see Logan Tyler in person, that's a guy that I wouldn't want to fight, right? I'm talking about a punter here. That's Logan Tyler is a big dude. He's athletic. He really has also not been kicking and punting for all that long either. So I think eventually he's going to be very good. Offensively, I mean, what is there to say? This offense, Jimbo Fisher's offense, continues to come out, man, in first halves of games against Power 5 opponents. You want to know how many points they've scored in the last four games?
In the first half or the first quarter?
First half. First quarter is probably even worse. God, I didn't bother to look that up.
First quarter, I think, is zero, actually. 9 points?
13 against Ole Miss. 10 right. against Louisville. 7 against UNC. And 3 against Miami. So if this trend holds, they're going to score negative 1 point against Wake Forest in the first half, which is concerning. Given that that's against the rules. This first down trend, dude, or this first half trend for Florida State scoring is really pretty bad, too. If you take it back, the bowl game, they only scored 3 against Houston in the first half, I believe. I think they had 10 against Florida. That like we said, being in a hole is only partially the defense's fault, and the greater portion is certainly the defense, but if you don't score any points, it's very easy to get into a hole. And again, Florida State came out and didn't execute an offense in the first half. Now, sure, Francois missing, about 8 plays there was a pretty big deal. Absolutely. But that's still, only having 3 points is bad. I thought Florida State's offense was actually really disappointing against Miami. To have less than 6 yards of play down there, to go for 5.4, That's not very good. Only 407 total yards.
But and they did 100 of them were in 2 plays. You have the Dalvin 50-yard run and the 55-yard pass.
Right. Now, I got to admit, man, I don't really mind explosive plays. You know, like, chunk plays are cool. At the very least, they flip field position. You know, I think it's a problem if you're totally feast or famine, you know? But Florida State had the pass for 59. It had the run for 54. But other than that, it really didn't live on chunk plays too much. If you look at the rushing, they only had 1 other 15-yard run on the night. And in the pass game, they only had 3 passes of 20 or more yards. So I think those are fairly reasonable definitions of chunk plays, right? Mm-hmm. And Florida State really didn't have very many of those. So it was really kind of extremely methodical and or really big. There weren't a whole lot of those like 15-yard passes. In fact, I think they only had one pass over 15 yards other than the three I just mentioned. And they didn't have very many, you know, 10-yard runs either. A lot of it, like Florida State on first down. You remember how in the first part of this podcast I read off the first down runs for Miami?
Yes.
Check these out. 0, -3, 15, 2, 11, -3, 6, 8, 5, 4, 7, 4, 5, 8, 3, 1, 1, 2, 8. That's a whole lot of numbers that aren't negatives, zeros, ones, or twos. What it meant was that Florida State set up a lot of second down and manageables. They didn't have a whole lot of second and longs in this game. I mean, they had a couple second and sevens, but they had a whole lot of plays where it was, you know, I think they set up other than gaining first downs, obviously. I think they had 10 second downs that were second and six or less. That's pretty good. Florida State was also really good in short yardage, man. Their offensive line, I thought, played poorly during a lot of this game. Part of that's how Miami plays, and part of that also is on DeAndre Francois for not getting the ball out hot. I mean, some of those sacks and hits are literally his fault for not getting rid of the ball. But short yardage running, Florida State was 5 of 7 converting short yardage on the ground. Also passed one time on third and short. So on the day, 6 of 8. Would have been 7 of 8 if Dalvin Cook hits the right hole on this one play that I pointed out on my Twitter account. And that was good because in third and long, Florida State was only 2 of 6, which is not very good. The key was Florida State stayed out of third and long a lot better than Miami did. Florida State only faced 6 third and longs on the night. Miami faced 11 and converted 3. So 3 of 11 converted for Miami. That's very acceptable, obviously, if you're Florida State's defense. But still, man, this is not 20 points, barely over 400 yards, 5.4 per play. That's, I will say Florida State, I guess they did a decent job getting points out of their yardage output, or not at least not a horrible one, but I wasn't very impressed by the offense. They're very lucky that the defense came to play as well as it did, and that DeMarcus Walker blocked that field goal attempt or that extra point attempt.
Fortunate, certainly. One thing I do want to mention on the offensive side of the ball is certainly it was frustrating. Some frustrations with the output and particularly how they come out of the gate. And we're both right to point out that that's tied to the defense's woes as well. When you got an offense that just doesn't do anything for you too frequently in the first half of the game, it puts the defense in a horrible or a bad situation, a tough situation, and also doesn't put any pressure on them as far as play calls and just makes it too easy in general. But for a group that is often maligned, and maybe one wide receiver, there's some frustrations with, but particularly the effort and the play that you got out of Bobo Wilson and even Kermit to a lesser extent, two levels of play that they'll probably want to be remembered for if they were to be able to choose a game as far as their time here at Florida State. Bobo in particular, that's probably the best game I've ever seen him play by a long shot.
Absolutely. He was really, really good in that game. I was extremely pleased with his play. You know, Travis Rudolph didn't really do much in this game, but I'll tell you what, Whitfield and especially Wilson, like you said, Wilson made some tough catches. He was physical. I know they got Auden Tate in there some. You know, this was the first time that a Florida State receiver has caught a touchdown pass against Miami since 2011?
No, I didn't know that. Damn, that's hard to believe.
Florida State did not have a receiver catch a touchdown pass against Al Golden. Or wait, was Golden there in 2011? I'm trying to think.
I guess we just...
Yes, he was, because that was the game in Tallahassee where Bradham just knocked the hell out of that kid.
Right, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so last
five
games...
Well, when you can throw screen passes to your wide receivers for touchdown, buds, you know, I mean, I guess that's
look,
I guess
man,
that's not
point,
as important.
Beggars can't be choosers, Ingram. We're talking about going on 5 years without a receiver catching a touchdown against Miami. Overall, I think there are a lot of things the offense can improve on. I'm much happier with the offense than I am the defense on the season. Obviously, the defense has been a disaster. The offense has just been, I would say, up and down, but it's had some really good moments, especially with a redshirt freshman quarterback who we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about how tough he was. Now, look, DeAndre Francois still throws the ball late far too often. He still holds onto the ball way too long. A lot of those hits are actually on him for not getting the ball out. That's not just us claiming that. If you watch Fisher's coach's show or you actually listen to his interviews, he talks about how Francois needs to get the ball out hot here, or maybe if you work this side, you know, this guy's open, that type of stuff. And part of me thinks, well, you know, maybe this is kind of on the play calling for asking a redshirt freshman to do this much with his arm and not use his legs a little more. Maybe a little zone read mixed in there. But overall, I think you got to be very pleased with where he is. And the toughness that he showed, I do agree with Fisher when he says if the quarterback is tough, the team is tough. And Francois certainly was tough in this game.
Hard to imagine a tougher quarterback. Absolutely. I'd like to see him maybe not have to recover from quite as many shots. I agree with you. I think he puts himself in a place to take one or two more hits than maybe he does than he would need to. I did, not that he was sliding down all the time, but I did like that he seemed to be a little bit more open to incorporating the slide into what he was doing when he had the ball under his arm. Certainly had a nice little run there at the end of the game. Well, really a couple different runs at the end of the game to really ice it for you, but a great effort overall. Francois is a solid quarterback who very much seems to have the confidence in the team. Also picked up a lot of confidence and respect from former Florida State players, if you judged what they had to say on Twitter on Saturday night. But a guy who is kind of growing into that role. We don't want to be bold and start talking about him being, you know, one of the better quarterbacks even in the conference yet. I just don't think that's the case, but all the tools there to be that in time. Still a redshirt freshman, and as you rightfully mentioned, at times probably some of the things that I asked of him maybe put him in a place to take some hits that he probably shouldn't otherwise be exposed to. But not a guy that you can question his toughness, and a guy who seemingly has full buy-in from the team, and as he should at this point.
All right, so let's talk about something here that's important because we ripped Jimbo Fisher for it last week, and that was game management. This was like a total 180 on the first real time of the game where they have a legitimate chance. Do you punt or do you go? What does Jimbo Fisher do? He makes not the risky decision. The risky decision there would be trying a long field goal or punting. Mm-hmm. The smart and safe decision is to go for it, and they don't get it. But that's okay, because you have to factor in game score, game situation, and the field position value, right? What is the value of sticking your opponent with the ball on their side of the field? In that case, it was significant compared to the potential value of a field goal, which also could be blocked, or if you miss 7 yards deeper where the opponent's taken over, obviously from where the ball's kicked. Or a punt, which is probably only going to net you, let's say, 25 yards of field position from you know, just inside the 40 there. So
if that,
you know, that was an absolutely correct decision. Now, on his coach's show, Fisher called this no man's land, right? Which doesn't necessarily give me like great hope that the reason why he did it was because he understood that, you know, the field position value necessarily, but look, whatever. He at least made the right call, which is something he has certainly not done in his career. It's one of the only things I think that he doesn't do at a high level as a head coach. But he made it there. He also, look, Ingram, you realize what they did before the half? They actually went and tried to score. Certainly wasn't going to leave those timeouts and leave that possession in his back pocket this week as compared to last week. And I understand the field position was not the same against Miami as it was against North Carolina, nor were the timeout situations. However, North Carolina's defense is garbage compared to Miami's. So you also have to factor that in, and they went ahead and they tried to get points. Maybe that's because they didn't want to get shut out in the first half of the game. But I thought Jimbo Fisher managed this game much better. Now, taking the timeout early in the second half when Saunders kind of had his hands up like he didn't know what the play was. Maybe that's a timeout that I don't want to take if I'm down by two scores there. But other than that, I thought Fisher managed the game extremely well. I thought overall the offense did not play very well, but he did have some timely play calls. I like the throwback to Dalvin Cook there. I like the called bootleg with the extra blocker, kind of the personal escort there. Mm-hmm. He also ran that play against Clemson to run the game out with E.J. Manuel and Rodney Hudson in 2010, was it?
Exactly what I was going to say, yeah.
Okay.
Big old 62 lead blocking for him.
Nice, yes. We also played a fun game. Can you name all the times that the middle screen has worked for this offense?
Oh, man. Yeah, I had this on Twitter where I mentioned, I think you tweeted that out, and the obvious one that comes to mind is Rashad Greene against Clemson. I mentioned that that was the only thing that I could remember and that it wouldn't kill me to see that play scrapped from the playbook. Somebody said that Jamon Fortson evidently had one against UNC that
against
went
North
off
Carolina,
well.
But it was called back. It was the 2009 game, and I don't know if it's the same drive. I don't think it was the same drive that Ponder hits Rod Owens, but if you guys remember this, you can pull it up. It's on YouTube. There's also a really funny clip in the YouTube of that game where James Coley's like catch the ball, Bo, right before he catches it up from the they got like the little coach's cam there in the coach's box. So Fortson catches it. He actually gets horse collared, and there's no call on that. And they call some ticky tack, like blocking before the ball was caught or something penalty. So that's two. Corey Cerenzi caught one against Clemson in Tallahassee in what I guess was 2008, I think. And he scored on it, or was at least like down to the one, I think. That was also the same game where they ran that little reverse to Lewis Givens. Remember him?
Barely, yeah. Huh.
And then I think there's one more. I want to say they actually ran one to Kelvin one time in 2013. And it worked, but I don't remember which game it was. It might have been Pitt. So that's four that we can think of. Three of which worked, one of which didn't, although it would have worked otherwise. The rest of them, their success rate on this play has got to be in like the teens or maybe the low 20s.
It's tough, man. I mean, if you go and look at it, it's just the play against Miami in particular. You're asking your left guard to make a block that's damn near impossible on that play. And there's a lot of things to it. And Florida State didn't cover themselves in glory by any means as far as how they blocked it or how they the execution of it in general. But there's outside of just the execution. Schematically, you're asking a lot of a couple different people in that play, and as you and I both just mentioned, when you and I, two people who have consumed the vast majority of every minute of Florida State football played over the last decade, are having a hard time coming up with more than three or four times when it's been successful. It's a play that you're not doing something right, or at least you're asking a whole lot of people that may not be in a place to be able to do exactly what that play wants.
Right. And not to mention, it's a play that's really successfully run by air raid teams. You know, Texas Tech runs the hell out of that. Mm-hmm. So does Washington State, but there's a reason for it. It actually works better if everybody's more spread out. And I really wonder if Florida State tips this play. I don't know that they do, but it seems like their success rate on it is so poor. By the way, I saw a good stat tonight. I think it was from David Hale or maybe Brett McMurphy, one of the ESPN guys. You know, Dalvin Cook, who we always talked about how the scouts behind us at the game told us, hey, the only real question is his hands, other than the ability to stay healthy. He's on pace to be the only player, I believe in college football history, to have 1,700 rushing yards and 700 receiving yards. That's pretty incredible.
It is incredible. That would be amazing. That's something that we talked about coming into the beginning of the year. I'll blow my own horn or whatever the expression is that I talked about that I didn't think Cook would have the same rushing output, but I thought very possible that his total yardage would match what he did last year just because You heard enough out of camp that that they were trying to feature him more in the passing game, and that that's something that he had worked on. And that is going to do not that Dalvin needs a whole lot of improvement in his eyes on the, as far as what people who work on Sunday think of him, but that will be a major bolster, a major boosting factor for his NFL stock. And it's each time he brings a ball in the passing game is only going to help him as far as where he goes on Sunday.
Oh, there's no doubt about it, man. I'm happy for him. I'm happy to see he's playing hard. You know, you mentioned Francois maybe not be a you know, top 20 quarterback nationally, and that's not a knock on him. I completely agree. If you look at this, though, real quickly, I know we're probably going to run over tonight and whatever. Think about, like, Francois compared to the best second-year guys in the country, okay? Jake Browning at Washington, obviously highest-rated QB in the country. Lamar Jackson, Ryan Finley at NC State, who has played a really good year so far. I think Sean White's a redshirt sophomore, so I'm not going to count him. That would make him a third-year guy. Drew Locke at Missouri. You know, he measures up to a lot of these first- and second-year guys very well. I think that's probably the proper context to judge him. You know, there was a debate on Twitter, is Francois already a top 20 quarterback? And I thought, no. But I a lot of people took that as a knock, and I was just like, that's not a knock. He's just not there yet. But compared to his competition, as far as guys who have played just 1 or 2 years of football, I think he's measuring up very well. And especially if Florida State continues to sort of learn about their quarterback and figure out what he can and can't do, and to continue to craft the offense around him as opposed to trying to craft him into the offense, then I think he'll continue to get a lot better. You want to take some reader questions, or you got anything else to hit for?
I think that's all that I had, really. Francois, great to see some of the things that he does well. Want to point out that one pass to Kermit, where he did such a good job of reading the run pass option, and also the effort blocking of Tate and Rudolph on that touchdown that makes it 17-10 there. Great to see, first of all, Fisher call an RPO like that, and more encouraging to see your quarterback read it correctly, and total, not to be too cliche, but truly a total team effort with the effort that you get out of your wide receivers as far as what they do downfield for you there.
But Ingram, when you're the number one Noles podcast, you realize you can get more than one sponsor, and we do. And what sponsor was with us from day one? That's Madison Social. The best place for food and drink in Tallahassee, right there in the shadow of Doak Campbell Stadium. It's an upscale sports pub. And man, with this weather right now, there's no place I'd rather be. Outside on the patio, taking in the sights, sipping a beer, maybe having some wings, or for lunch, one of their awesome salads, maybe a burger, maybe some BLT dip. A lot of really great options there at Madison Social. Should be one of the best weekends of the year as far as weather and atmosphere. But they have something pretty cool, too, I know you want to talk about.
Absolutely. One of the great things that having a sponsor like Madso provides is that they've got their finger on the pulse of the fan base, and they're always doing great little things to just to help you remember some of the more special moments out there. And they have a nice pint glass with the "We Own You" with a kind of sphere dropping down through the U, something that you guys have probably seen before. And surprise, surprise, or I guess ironically enough, Bud, they will have these available for the next 7 days. Something to add to your collection. Great little thing for your man cave or whatever it is that you may enjoy to stock with any kind of Florida State paraphernalia. And it's just something unique and something that they do a great job of offering. So go to madisonsocial.com/weownyou and pick up a set of those pint glasses and enjoy. Enjoy the sweet taste of victory for the next 364 days, and I guess it's not quite that long at this point. Next 359, anyway, as you can look back and enjoy 20-19.
I would love to sip one of those Nolcast Bloody Marys in one of those We Own You glasses.
That'd be synergy on top of synergy, bud. Well done.
All right. So, first question from FSU fan in South Carolina. says McFadden discussion. He is young but seems to have coverage and tackling issues. Please discuss. Well, I think he actually lost that one ball in the lights. His coverage that in the touchdown he gave up is not that bad. Certainly, some of the interceptions that he has this year are kind of lucky in that the ball has just come right to him. But at the same time, he's been in position to make those interceptions. If he can just be tougher and more consistently locked in, mm-hmm. I think he's going to be a really good cornerback for Florida State because I think he has better footwork than I expected him to have at this time. Now, there were a couple issues where in that game, Miami hit some RPO throws where they fake to the back and then the quarterback reads and the backer comes up. Well, Florida State's in some two-man stuff there, and really he is absolutely must keep inside leverage. He actually starts the play with inside leverage, and then somehow he allows the corner to get inside of him, which is a footwork issue but also a concentration issue. If he can get tougher in the run game and work on the concentration issues a little bit, I think he's going to be really good. I think it's very plausible that he maybe didn't see the ball because if anybody looks up for the ball, it's McFadden. McFadden's always looking up for the ball, right. Sometimes to his detriment.
Yeah. No, he's not one to get called for the Quez White not turning around for the ball. Good point there. Absolutely.
This one's from Florida Star 23. Young guys like Taylor Lane, et cetera, playing have to do more with being finally healthy. Coaches trying to instill new life or a mixture of both? I think both is probably the appropriate answer here, right? Certainly Taylor was dealing with a thigh injury, but I think there was also an element of him needing to fully buy into the defense there. So certainly part of that. But look, man, some of the veterans they had in there weren't playing very well. Some of the veterans they had in there weren't healthy. They needed this injection of youth. But some of it was also just necessity. Like, I don't really think they had plans to play Urban Lane a whole lot, but guys got hurt, and so in came Urban Lane. With Andrews most likely out for a while, has Lane earned himself a starting spot? If he hasn't, he certainly earned a lot of snaps. This is from Last Knoll of Krypton. Does Saturday's performance change anything in regards to the defensive staff? I'm going to say no. Now, we gave them credit, and you can feel free to disagree with me here. I'll lay out my case first. We gave them credit, certainly, for changing the game plan, installing a game plan here that was, you know, pretty simple. Not that the ones against North Carolina weren't simple, but you know, giving a game plan to these kids that they could trust and they could digest, and that they could play confident in. And we gave them credit for getting these kids to play with effort. Although, granted, it's Miami, so it's hard to know if it was the coaches who did that or if it was literally just the kids being jacked up because they didn't want to get embarrassed against Miami. But 34 points against Ole Miss still happened. 63 points against Louisville happened. 37 against North Carolina happened. I'm not going to go and reverse my argument on South Florida. That was still mostly garbage time. But those things happened. And we have been steadfast in our thing to say, look, don't give this defense too much credit for improving against bad teams. And I'm not saying Miami's a bad offense, but after watching them, I don't think they're better than North Carolina, Louisville, or Mississippi, and I'm not sure they're better than USF. So maybe they are, but I don't think it's by a large margin. Don't let quality of competition decreasing get confused for quality of defensive play increasing. They're different things. And I think both things are actually happening here, but it's important not to give too much credit. If they go shut down Clemson and they go shut down NC State and Syracuse and they're able to like shut out Florida, which is a bad offense this year, then I think they're going to deserve more credit. But you have to evaluate not just on how much they've improved, but also on the totality of the season. And there's a chance this defense could elevate itself and be like a top 40 defense by the end of the year, statistically. That's still awful by Florida State standards. That's unacceptable. So those things happened, and I think that there's no, I really don't have much changed opinion on this defensive staff. I think that's really still concerning. And, you know, if you give me 7 more dominant games this year, maybe I'll reconsider. But at this point, no.
Certainly the Clemson game will be something that that everybody's judged by, and a game that you have to have a little bit more confidence in, and at least being able to make a respectable showing after this weekend. Yeah, I mean, it's going to take you know, repetitive examples of just general competency. It'll also be, you know, something that you'll have to see against a scheme, one that's unlike Miami's, one that not necessarily kind of pairs up with what you want to do, or at least what you can do in the most simplistic terms of defense, and run a bunch of stuff that's, you know, man and safety's playing zone, and just kind of the fundamental, easier, simplistic, more the more base level defensive stuff. So it doesn't undo everything. I think you still are at a situation where you have to be pretty skeptical as far as what you've gotten out of your defense as a whole. And that's not gonna change just because you went down to Coral Gables and got a victory. At the same time, it's certainly a completely different level of competency and effort and all the things that we spent the first 40 minutes talking about. So you don't want to dismiss it, but it's not as though everything's cured either, based off one level of play that you got out of the team that, you know, you probably get the most, that or Florida. You can argue 6-1, half dozen the other. But, you know, you're going to get kids that that focus and give 100% effort, or at least the closest thing possible to it, when you play those teams. So, again, hard to make a whole lot of large, sweeping, general comments off of what you got on Saturday night.
I agree with you there. And I don't think our positions are that far apart. This is still a defense that's given up 27 touchdowns on the year through six games. That's awful. All right. What did you see from the young players on defense? At one point, I counted 5 first-year players at one point. Number 1, 7, 99, 94, and 5. You know what I saw? I saw them playing at 100 miles an hour. And that's not something you always see in young players. A lot of times young players are out there, they're slow stepping, they're not quite sure of themselves. What I saw with these guys is that they're making mistakes. They're making those mistakes at 100 miles an hour. They are playing aggressive. They're confident players. I think they're going to keep pushing for playing time. It doesn't mean they get it. Look, Dontavius Jackson doesn't always know what he's doing, but he at least plays hard. And for the people that think he should be starting over Matthew Thomas, I think those people are not based in reality. Matthew Thomas is actually playing.
You could see it for half.
You will. But Thomas was actually playing really well in that game before he got ejected. You know, he made a number of open field tackles. He was getting pressure on Brad Kaya. Mm-hmm. Thomas has also actually been better than Hoskins this year. So if he's going to replace anybody, I think it would have to be Hoskins. I'm encouraged by
Hoskins. Hoskins had, we didn't mention him in the defensive side of the ball, but certainly a level of play that you hadn't gotten out of him either this year.
Yeah, absolutely on that. Okay, how bad has Eberle actually been playing? Got his butt whipped against Miami up and down the field. Do we see Baselli again? Definitely not on the Baselli thing. Look, that's the best option you got right there. Miami's center also got whipped. It's not an easy position to play. I think that Miami's defense on the interior is going to make a lot of centers look bad, especially if Gerald Willis actually comes back healthy. Also, Miami got away with a number of like illegal hands to the face penalties that I thought probably should have been called. But there was a lot of stuff you could call in that game.
Yeah,
Everly's not a great player.
Yeah, he's got a real bad habit of grabbing too. It got away with two pretty egregious holds in that game, and also got called for a couple as well. But not a great player, and as you said, just kind of the best of not great options when it comes to what you have at center.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I don't think he's a great player. I also don't think he's a bad player. You know, some of the stuff being attributed to him is actually a back missing a cut, especially the one that's kind of going around online. Somebody put out there, look at this. You know, if Eberle makes this block, this is the first down. I thought that. Look at the way he's stepping. He's stepping left. He's trying to seal that guy off. There's no reason to cut the ball right here. But that's kind of all they got. So, I mean, unless you're Alabama or Ohio State, you really don't have a whole lot better options than that on a consistent basis, I don't think. And Florida State doesn't recruit like that, so that's not going to happen anytime soon. Although you do have some young guys. Maybe next year they'll push for that. I guess we'll see. From 8-4 with the win on Saturday, have your season your in season predictions changed up to 9-3 or no?
Look, man, I love that. I love the Florida State Miami game, and just from a consumer of the product, that is as focused and obnoxious as I'll be in my living room all year. But I don't want to let that one game sway me too much, and I still have real concerns about what you'll look like against Clemson, obviously, and it wouldn't shock me to see you struggle against NC State potentially. So I don't know that that I am going to move too far off my number. Look, you get a win against Wake, and you go through the bye week, and we can start to talk about that before and after the Clemson game. But I don't want to make too much out of a 20-19 win.
Yeah, I'm right there with you on that. I think NC State is a very losable game. In fact, I think it might be more losable than Florida at home, especially because it's a potential letdown spot after Clemson. I'm assuming Clemson's a loss. I don't give them a chance to beat Clemson. Not a good chance, at least not with the secondary and these linebackers. Let's not say they can't, but I don't think it's a good chance. I think that what you have in his defense right now, with the effort, is strong, but some of the other stuff I think is kind of fool's gold. I think it'll get exposed by some better offenses that they're actually remember to use some motion and maybe use some spread concepts. So I'm going to stick with 8-4. But look, you figure you give them, what, like a 75% chance to beat Florida and like a 60% chance to beat NC State. So, you know, think about that. It's not impossible to think that they could actually win both of those. That's probably 50-50 to win both. Maybe 25% lose one and 25% lose both. So I'm going to stick with 8-4, but I think certainly when you win a coin flip type game like Miami was, it does help your win predictions. It bumps them up slightly.
Helps you just keep the season on track. I mean, look, I don't want to be morbid, but let's go back to that game real quickly. Say you say you're unable to pick up a first down there at the end of the game. You have to punt to Miami. They get the ball on, you know, your 47 with a minute left and two or three timeouts, and Miami wins that game on like a 49-yard field goal at the end of the game or something like that. I would shudder to think what this team looks like sitting at with a 3-3 record and going down and losing to their rival, losing two consecutive games on a kick. It's just a massive place and a massive change as far as what you could have been looking like. And it's a game to where you saw what full buy-in looks like and full effort looks like, and it's. You know, it's a game that can very much help you get back on track, but I don't know if it's an absolute indicator that you're there.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you there. All right, a couple more questions here. We've got to wrap this thing up. It's been a longer episode than we anticipated, I think. Any concerns with the struggles with the punt team other than hang time? Well, I think that the issue of kicking it to the correct side has been solved. We saw what happens when you don't do that against Louisville. That was about the easiest punt return you'll ever see. Did have a punt coverage issue against Miami, but overall I think it's been okay. Not great, certainly, but you got a freshman punter back there. How much of the defense's performance due to a pro-style offense and pocket passer? Certainly we talked about that a little bit. Having the pro-style offense, not so much necessarily. The pocket passer, more so, I think, because you're able to play so much more man coverage against a statue than you are against a mobile guy, which is why I said playing man coverage is not a substitute for playing good zone defense. Why is the defense all of a sudden pretty good? What changed in a week? I don't think it is, actually. I think it's, you know, perhaps approaching decent, but we'll have to see. It's way too early to call this defense good or pretty good. They have a lot more awful games than they do good games. How good of a duo can Saunders and Izzo ultimately be? Saunders feels like he can be an offense game changer as he grows. Well, Ingram, I don't know about you, man. I'm pretty excited about the possibility of having these guys for two more years each after this, because they're only redshirt sophomores.
Whew, man. And damn if the light doesn't seem to be coming on from Maven. What a catch that was by him. And Yeah, that's like the third week in a row that Maven's had a pretty ridiculous catch. So he's coming on. Izzo's been consistent throughout his career, really. I think we did a good job last year, if you want to go back to the position previews that we did when we talked about the tight ends, that maybe we believed what Jimbo Fisher was saying. We just didn't believe it would come to fruition until this year, maybe even in 2017, and that looks to be accurate. You've got two great tight ends and a lot of reason for optimism as far as what you might see there. And again, this is something we've talked about, but I think in Jimbo Fisher's heart of hearts, he kind of wants to run an offense that can heavily feature a double tight look consistently. If you've got a big physical tailback and two tight ends, what you can do, how much flexibility that gives you in the passing game, what you can do to stretch defenses and run wide, it's just a lot of flexibility there in general. So yeah, I don't think those guys are going anywhere, and the emergence of 88 has been pretty damn noticeable the last couple of weeks.
All right, that's going to be really fun to watch as they emerge. Why do you think Dalvin Cook is missing so many holes? I don't know if it's so many. I mean, it's certainly a higher percentage than I think people want. He missed several that would have either been first downs or broken wide open for touchdowns, and that's frustrating if you're blocking for him. But ultimately, Dalvin Cook's a warrior. He is the best back and forth in history. I don't regret saying that. I think he's proven it again this year.
Did a real good job a couple times, and something he's done throughout his career, but a great job of turning what looked to be a 3-yard loss into maybe a 1-yard gain. If I'm going to be as critical of him as you are as far as some of the selections that he made as far as holes, particularly early in the game. But he also just showed a crazy, crazy knack in being able to turn a disaster into more or less just a 1-yard gain, 1/2-yard loss, whatever. A lot of great things from Dalvin, and not all of them are going to be, particularly obvious to see when you look at the stat sheet.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Maybe he's just too eager to cut the ball back, or maybe he's predetermined. I don't know. But certainly he's running hard, at least. That's an encouraging thing. Actually, we're at an hour and 14, so we're going to cut this now. We'll catch you next week. Actually, not next week, but we'll be back for our game preview episode. We'll have to find a Wake Forest guest. I think I may actually have one lined up.
I think we can do that.
Hey, if this defense can improve, we can find a Wake Forest guest. All right. Miracles happen every day.
Well said, sir. Appreciate it.
5 stars on iTunes, y'all. Make sure to hit us up. If you got any questions, always on email or on Twitter at Nolcast. Please make sure to use that account, not the Tomahawk Nation account, because my mentions on Tomahawk Nation are pretty much always a mess, and we are much more likely to see them if you shoot them to this podcast account. Take care. The U is all about the touchdown. They come to the running back, Jermaine Thomas, for 17 yards. It's all about the short punt fielded by Greg Reed. He's going to go. It's all about the handoff now to Wilder, still on his feet, first for the end zone. Got it. What a powerful run by Wilder. It's all about the wants to throw the ball. Gives it to the late blitz. Gets the pass. Got a convoy to the left side. Devontae Freeman, 45 to the 40. Near sideline, outside of the number. To the 30. To the 30. 25 to the 20. To the 10 to the 5. Touchdown, FSU. Screen pass play. Devontae Freeman takes it to the house. Say it.
There is no safety. Had a son by the name of Seven, and he's five. By the time I do this mix, he'll probably be six. You do the arithmetic, me do the language arts. Y'all stand against the wall, blindfolded, me throw the darts to poke you in the heart and take you from the start to when luxury transportation meant a martyr card. Or either when your girlfriend that went to May's mama or her daddy let her borrow the Benz because she's smart. Or maybe if your neighbor does you a huge favor and he sells you that rabbit that's been sitting in his yard. You fix it up, you trick it out, you give it rims, you give it bump, you give it all your time, because that's all you can think about.